You've tuned in to Mythbehaving, a podcast where we get up and close and personal with today's most imaginative authors. Every episode, we'll be sitting down with a new writer to discuss their magical worlds, futuristic visions, and how they bring their wildest ideas to the page. Sitting in for my esteemed partner again today is the wonderful Jen Nixon. Jen, as my second esteemed partner, how was your week?
That's pretty good. It's been raining a couple of days here because of the hurricane on the East Coast, but other than that, pretty good. How about you?
Oh, I kind of hate you because I love rain.
Too.
So that's, you know, that's going to be the thrust of today's conversation. How much I hate you because you have rain. It's almost 90 here today. I get cooled down, which is my favorite. Like, I think fall should be cool, but apparently Southern California is like, no thanks. So
nope.
Yeah.
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 Well, so who do we have on the podcast this week?
I am so excited to welcome to the podcast this week, J.J. Claiborne. J.J. is an American author best known for his science fiction and crime fiction works. He also writes suspense horror and contemporary drama. In his free time, he likes to spend time with his family and pursue his many hobbies. J.J., welcome to Mythbehaving. How are you doing today?
Well, I was doing great till I heard about how nice both of yours weather is.
So everybody hates everybody now.
Yeah. I'm in Phoenix and it's almost 100 today and we haven't had rain since I can't remember when.
Oh, I mean, that's kind of on you because Phoenix, but.
Yeah. Rain is kind of a myth here.
Right.
I'm from New Jersey. We always have rain. I was born on a rainy day. I love the rain. I belong in Seattle.
Right. It rains 400 days out of the year in Seattle. Yeah. I think about moving there all the time.
Yeah, there are days here where there are literally no clouds in the sky. Yeah. And it's just a wall of blue.
Yeah. Oh, it's a well-named city, just a fiery, fiery place.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
So I know you as John. I'm actually going to meta here for a second. I know you as John, but explain to me. You write as JJ for some stuff, but you write as John for other stuff. So explain that to me.
Yeah. That's a good thing. So, I mean, you and I, we've known each other on online for many years,
like
now.
10 years.
And,
yeah.
Wow. Quite the conversation, friendship going back a long time.
Yeah.
I write fiction work under JJ Claiborne, and then I write nonfiction work under Jonathan J. Claiborne. So both of those are still me. It's just I tried to make it an easy way to differentiate for readers what's fiction and what's nonfiction, and going to make it simple that way.
So they don't get confused. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's nice.
Back in the day, they wanted you to change your name between genres, believe it or not.
That's a bit crazy.
Crazy. But nonfiction to fiction, that makes sense.
You know, Robert Jordan had Robert Jordan isn't even his real name. That's his fantasy genre name.
That's his nom de plume.
Right. He had six different, because he wrote all over the place. I think he even critiqued, I want to say it was figure skating. He had a name where he wrote for figure skating or something. I have to look that back up. But yeah, I remember coming across when he got famous for Wheel of Time. There was a book out by Reagan O'Neill or something like that. And it says actual author name, Robert Jordan. I know that's not his name either. So yeah, that used to be a real big thing. Yeah.
And I actually know you through a couple of authors. Actually, Rob is one of them. And T.S. Hoddle is another. He always talks about you. And then, and then you happened to board up on Elysian Press, which is also another way I know Rob.
Right. We go way back.
Everybody knows Rob.
People, right? Right. And you are a science fiction writer. I was just on your website. I see you have a 20 book arc you're working on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my big series. The first one I started, I've been world building that series for, gosh, a decade.
Yep.
And so in the first version of that, which is called the Exodus arc, it begins with an Irish athlete from the future who makes probably not the best choices and ends up running for his life. And he has to stow away aboard a colony ship in order to get away. And so he ends up on a completely alien planet, like just figuring out as he goes along, and things go completely pear-shaped, as they would.
Right.
And so that book kind of sets the stage for everything else that follows. And so I'm not a pantser writer. Like I've tried. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. I need right. at least a lattice or a framework to get started. And like a short story, I can pants that, sure. But a novel, there's I'm not that person. So I originally had started that whole series. I had like a dream where I dreamed the seventh book in that arc, or at least part of it. And I woke up and I started writing it out. And I got like a third of the way through the novel. But I said, well, why did that happen? Oh, well, that happened because of this. But why did that happen? Oh, well, that happened because of this. Mm-hmm. Next thing I know, it's 2,000 years earlier. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to start at the beginning and tell the story in order.
Oh, so kind of
put that one on pause and came back to it. And so in the Fracture arc, there's a beginning section to the story, you know, a prologue. And I know a lot of people skip prologues, but in this case, the prologue kind of sets the tone for the whole arc.
Is that a where thing?
This grandfather is explaining the family history to his grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of ask like, hey, what's going on? How did our family get here? And he's like, well, I'm glad you asked. And they go into the book. So in the second book, when the prologue starts, he's just finished explaining that chapter of the family story. And then they ask another question and it begins the second one. So all of the prologues tell a complete story if you were to put them side by side by side. And so every book in that series begins and ends with different members of the family throughout this entire history period. But because of the way that I'm telling it through the eyes of the character, mm-hmm. there's certain questions that I know the answers to,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't just have the characters know that because mm-hmm. they don't know the answer to that, which is why there's a second arc within that same universe.
That's mm-hmm. pretty cool. I like that.
It's kind of How I Met Your Mother, only they want to know the answers.
Yeah. Yeah. And everything in mm-hmm. the entire story is the fault of the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, otherwise indifferent. He sets in, like, if you've ever taken a stone and thrown it into the water, it creates mm-hmm. ripples.
Yeah.
And sometimes the ripples bounce off of things and make new ripples, and the ripples interact with each other. That's the way that it is. Like, he sets into motion
mm-hmm.
things that he can't even comprehend right. in his bid to escape. And so everything happens. It's all interconnected.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's fun. I enjoy that.
And you're on book 7 now?
No, so I have them all planned out. I started book 7. Book 7 was like a third of the way done. I went back to the beginning. So book 1 is finished and out, and I'm halfway through writing book 2, and I have all of the draft notes and everything for all of the other books in the series. All the notes are there to the point where, like, if something happened to me and I disappeared off the face of the earth tomorrow, another writer could step in and pick up where I left off, and they would mm-hmm. see exactly where the story was going.
Nice.
You really do like your world building, though. I mean, not like you're like a prima donna about it, but I know you're very passionate about world building.
And, yeah, I mean, I think even that goes back to when I was a teenager, you know, we would play Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy mm-hmm. games and stuff like that. And there were just some things about the world building that would drive me bananas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would have like a desert right next to a glacier. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that's not how geology works. And so for me, I like things that make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it the more that I usually will give a story like one free pass. Like, don't waste it.
Yeah.
But if it's something that's so overt, over the top, I get disconnected from it. Like, mm-hmm. the suspension from disbelief is gone. So I spend a lot of time writing stuff down and figuring stuff out so that I know how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it doesn't make it into the book, mm-hmm. I still have it. Like, I spent...
You can't break your own rules.
Exactly. It's got to be internally in, internally consistent with itself. I have an entire like wiki dictionary that I run off my computer that has all of the characters in the whole book, the complete timeline of everything that happens. Wow. I spent like nice. 3 pages of technical notes on the Ark ship that's in that story, figuring out like the size and the mass and how much internal cargo volume it has, so that I know when they get there, this is how screwed they are. But of course, only like 2 or 3 paragraphs of that makes it into the story, because that's all that's really relevant.
Right. Yep.
But I have it. I know it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I heard Terry Brooks once say you should know like 3 levels. Like you should be able to answer 3 questions. Like, did your character eat today? Yes. Did they, you know, what did they have? Well, they had breakfast. What was for breakfast? But none of that has to go in. You should correct. Just be able to answer.
Correct.
That.
It's yeah. like, what are the readers actually care about? Mm-hmm. What's relevant to the story? What moves the action further? So there's stuff that I know. Mm-hmm. Like I could tell you the economic breakdown of the world right. and like what percentage of people work what jobs, right. but it's not relevant for that story.
Yeah.
And you'd be in a Jack Reacher book, because then he just goes on and on and on about facts that nobody cares about, Jack. Just
right. I may put them in like the initial rough draft, and then I go through and read it, and I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That doesn't right. matter.
Take that I see out. Somebody that discovered matter. YouTube yesterday. You went down the rabbit hole, didn't you? Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
How do you draw your line though, John?
I mean, I try to put it in the perspective of what's the point of the story? Where's the story going? And so like my writing process, you know, I'm more of the archetyped mode, but the way I describe it is more like a lattice that you put a vine onto, and then the vine can twist and weave and turn in and around and through the lattice, but the lattice provides structure and rigidity to what's going on. And so anytime that the book starts, I've got at least like a single sentence outline for kind of what happens in that chapter. I've got a clear start point and end point, like this is where the story is going. Mm-hmm. And then I usually take that from a macro level of like what's happening. And then I look at, well, who's it happening to and who's making it happen? And how do both of those groups of people feel about it? And do the both groups of people know about each other? And if they do know about each other, how do they feel about each other? Mm-hmm. And what are their motivations, good, bad, or otherwise? Because even within a group, there could be people that have different motivations. And so just answering those kinds of questions really allows me to develop some rich characters and character interactions so that I can play them off of each other and create something that's really dynamic. But then that gives me a starting point, and I can start to make the characters consistent with each other as we go, that weed begins to grow through the lattice.
Nice. I like that.
I like your lattice.
That's, yeah, it's a really cool metaphor.
It's a nice way to think about it. Like everything should weigh together. Well, I mean,
it's not like it's set in stone, right? Mm-hmm. The initial framework that I had drawn up for Exodus, which is the first book in the Starsong Chronicles series, I think it was 20 chapters in my outline. Mm-hmm. And I ended up with 22. Mm-hmm. But if you compare the actual chapters with what's in my outline, it's not a one-to-one match. Like some of the planned chapters got shortened to just a couple paragraphs, and some got merged together, and I split some out into other chapters, and so I can still change it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just, it gives me a direction.
Right.
I never run into that problem. I'm like, well, what happens now?
You're not one of those authors.
Not one of those authors.
I have that problem all the time.
Right. I'm stuck. We're both pantsers though. So
yeah. And for me, like I've got even in my crime fiction series, I have outlines of more books that I have time to write at the moment. I have the opposite problem. I have more
ideas
than I have free time at the moment.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain, you can sell your ideas to other writers. They'll buy them.
I've
honestly seen people do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the opposite of ghostwriting. Here's my idea. Here's an outline. Good luck. The story. Yeah.
Good luck. Yeah.
Yeah. People need that.
This episode of Myth Behaving is brought to you by the Bath Bomb Diva, producing fine handcrafted bath bombs and shower steamers. Scents ranging from fruits to floral to musk to weird French names, the Diva offers a wide selection for maximum olfactory goodness. Bath bombs are offered with and without prizes inside and made using water-soluble dyes for no messy residue. Entirely coincidentally in time for Halloween is the Final Girl Bath Bomb, scented with Grim Reaper oil, which, oddly, is floral and pungent. It is decorated with a plastic stabby slashy toy and containing a button picturing an icon of 80s and 90s horror. Halloween-themed glass bottles and toy cauldrons of bubble bath are also on offer. Check all the creations out at www.bathbombdiva.com. And thanks again to Bath Bomb Diva for sponsoring the show.
So I have a question for you. What is your favorite part of the world building that maybe people wouldn't think needs part of the world building?
I enjoy all the parts of the world building, especially like a sci-fi world building. I could get all the way down into like planetary creation and tectonics and all of that. But really, at the end of the day, the thing that I think is probably the most important to get right is the societal aspects of the where those characters are living in the story. How does the government work? How does the people interact with each other? What are the set of rules and laws and customs that they abide by? What major groups of people are there? How do they interact with each other? That's really the threads that kind of hold it, because stories are about people. Right? And so if stories are about people, then it would follow that the people aspect of world building is probably the most important thing to spend your time on. If you wrote a book and you're like, yeah, it's on an alien planet and the sky is pink and there's three moons and you just never said anything more than that, it would be fine. Like, as long as the rest of it is holds well together. Thought out.
No, that's such a good point, because some of the most lasting stories that we have that you know, we still talk about are the ones that were built off of, you know, very strict rule sets that people then understood, but maybe we don't now. Like, you know, you think about like 47 Ronin, like that whole story is all about like what is honor, what is duty, like, and right. That drives those characters for years. That's crazy. So no, I think you're absolutely right. That's it is about the people and the stories we tell ourselves. And
well, I think especially with newer authors to the field, that's an area that people tend to get bogged down in, because you know, today's people generally are much more scientifically literate than we were like 70 or 80 years ago. And so there's a lot more pressure to kind of get the science right. But I would still point out, like, you're telling the story from the perspective of the characters. And so rather than authors spending so much time figuring out, like, how does this specific faster than light drive technology work and what makes it happen? Like, how many of people who are driving a car today could explain exactly the mechanical principles of how the engine works in their car? Or their cell phone, or the how it works, or their computer. Like, we use technology every day that we don't fully understand or could explain. So why would it make sense for characters in a futuristic setting to be able to do that? You know, the helmsman could say, I don't know how the engines work. I just fly the ship.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually had one of my characters do that while she was flying, because I didn't know how to explain anything. I'm not a hard sci-fi writer. I am definitely a I would say sci-fi light or sci-fi fantasy, whatever. I don't do hard science in my research.
Yeah, but you know, nobody cares how the Millennium Falcon makes the jump to light speed. We only care.
We just care that it does.
Yeah,
it's broken. Somebody it's broken.
Right. That's a new plot point. That's gonna be a problem.
A cool. For me, like having been in and around like a bunch of indie writers over the last decade online, that seems to be one area where just a lot of people kind of struggle is how do you navigate that? When the thing that I would say is like, don't and deliberately leave it vague.
Right.
Just keep it consistent with itself. That's the biggest thing.
Right. I am somewhat impressed. You know, I stray into fantasy. Like I was going to be a fantasy writer in my youth, and then discovered steampunk and urban fantasy and thought those were much more fun from my point of view. I read a ton of fantasy, but I am always amazed at like fantasy authors who have a well-crafted magic system, and they do it so well that when they turn around and violate the system, there's a reason for it. Like it was built in that you could break the system.
Yeah, and that, like, that would I was just talking to somebody about that like a week or two ago. It's like in the fantasy world, like the magic system has to be internally consistent. Mm-hmm. You have to know like how does the magic work? Where does the power come from? Mm-hmm. What stops people from doing like making this world ending spell where they can snap their fingers and blow the planet apart? Like what's the limit to it? How does it work?
Once
you figure it out though, like you got to stick to it.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause otherwise like, well, cause you want your hero to win, but
they got to work for it.
They got to work. It's no fun. Just like, it's not a cheat code. You don't get God mode.
Well, that's one of the things that I have built into my book series is even it's a theme that I have both in the sci-fi book and the crime fiction book that I released is like the characters struggle and they're not invincible and they suffer wounds and those wounds carry ramifications with them into future books. It's like that happens a lot, especially on TV, where a character will get hurt and then the next episode they're right back to full strength and it's like nothing happened
and we never talk about it again.
I've lived through some real life trauma and I can tell you that would leave a scar, right? You're gonna feel that in a week.
I actually just watched a show that one of the lead characters had like a busted eye and a busted lip and it carried through the whole show, the whole season. Nice. I was like, that's great.
Yeah, that's nice.
See, that's the kind of attention to detail and character development and stuff that I particularly enjoy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like without getting too much into it, like the first book of the Star Song sci-fi series is about the guy who came to the alien planet.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the second book, but the second book is really about his children.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens to him at the end of the first book directly affects him and his outcome in the second book. Those two things are intrinsically linked together.
Cool.
How much punishment do you put your characters through? Like, do you have a line?
I don't necessarily have a line. For me, it just goes back again to like what makes sense and what's realistic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so some of them can be pretty punishing and some of them cannot be. And a lot of it too is like, it's kind of got to be commensurate with the stakes. What are the stakes of the story? What's involved there? Like, they're trying to save their job or they're trying to save the planet, you know?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Job is should be a little less taxing.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, the character saving their job is going to say, "You know what? I'll just get a different job."
Yeah, so, don't need
worth it. This is too much
to get shot over this one.
Yeah, you can keep that job. It's all yours.
I don't want to save the world today.
Right.
Exactly. I'm tired. Just want to take a nap.
Awesome.
But at the moment I'm working on four books. I kind of write them simultaneously and bounce back and forth between them because I've noticed myself, if I spend too long on one thing, I tend to get kind of myopic with it. And, you know, you can't see the forest through the trees. And so I like to write a little bit and then put it down and switch gears to something else. So I'm writing.
Do you do that deliberately? Do you have I'll write 3,000 words and then I switch or something like that?
I even do the same when I'm reading a book. Like I will read a fiction and a nonfiction book kind of simultaneously because especially with the nonfiction books, I like to read a chapter and then just put it aside for like a week and just kind of cogitate on what happened and roll that around and kind of think it over. And it gives me time to absorb what I read rather than just plowing through it. And so like if I'm writing right now, I'm writing book two of this of the Star Song Chronicles. That one's called Planet Side and it's about his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also writing book two of the crime fiction series. That book's called The Ambassador. It's all outlined and ready to go. And that one is kind of a twist on the typical whodunit, where there's an ambassador who's murdered at a state dinner, but rather than trying to figure out who wants this guy dead, like, this guy was a jerk. Everybody wants him dead. And so now they got to figure out who actually killed him. Because
which one was it?
He was not a nice dude. So that's been really fun. And then I'm also working on a contemporary fiction story called The Denali Journal, about a plane crash in Alaska. Just a small private plane. These two people survive, and they're kind of eking out an existence in the wilderness, trying to figure out how to survive and get back to civilization.
Oh, wow.
And then my friend Greg and I are co-written a book called The Crescent, which is very nearly done. That one should be to print probably by Thanksgiving.
Oh, nice. Wow. And what's Greg's whole name?
Greg Bullock.
Okay. So we definitely want people, if they're interested, to be able to find that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. I kind of groove on survival stories. Like, I don't want to see too much punishment go on, but
yeah, I mean, this one, it's been fun because it's kind of like they team up and it's man versus nature for much of the book, but then there comes a turning point, and this is one thing I feel like a lot of authors who write ensemble stories kind of get wrong, that I think the MCU gets kind of right in terms of how they present the different characters is, look, just because you have characters that are working towards the same goal,
right,
that doesn't mean their motivations are aligned. It doesn't mean their end goals are aligned. Like, one character, that might be the end goal, but for a different character, that's just a stepping goal to a different goal. And so at some point, if things go pear-shaped, then there's an opportunity for friction to arise and disagreement and discord to happen, because the question of why are they pursuing that particular objective is different potentially for everybody in the cast. And so, like, in the book I wrote with my friend Greg, The Crescent, that comes up a lot, is there's an ensemble of a ship's crew, and they have a common purpose, but not a common reason. And so we get to play on that a lot. And that comes up in the Denali Journal to a lesser extent, because there's only two of them. But like, if they go from working together to wondering what the other person is up to.
That's not good. That's not where you want to be in a survival situation.
Right.
It's definitely intriguing for the reader.
Right. That's awesome.
Very cool. Yeah.
If you could have dinner with one of your characters, which one would it be and why?
That's an interesting question.
I gotcha, huh?
that's a tough one. I got a lot of interesting characters.
All of them. I can't pick one.
No. I mean, there's some characters that are kind of jerks.
Wouldn't
want to have dinner with them.
Yeah.
The ones who would kill you. Yeah, probably not them.
Yeah, definitely don't want to have dinner with the ones that would kill you.
I'd say maybe Detective Riley Schiller from my crime fiction series would be on the short list for sure. He's smart. He's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Or his partner, Kate. She's also very smart and very funny, but in a different way. Like, their humor kind of is not the same humor, but they're both very driven, motivated characters.
Their humor clashes a little from time to time, right?
Yeah.
I liked that. I read that one.
I was going like to say, I'm pretty sure you read that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I remember. They're both smart, funny, different. It was clever. Yeah, it's a good one. Everybody should own it.
Yeah, everybody should own it. You can get it on Amazon.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. That is the perfect way to segue to our conclusion, John. I'm going to ask you for your final thoughts, and then we'll close out.
Yeah, I mean, final thoughts, I would say, like, if you're a new writer writing in whatever genre, just keep writing, practice, try new things. Don't be afraid to experiment. Don't get so bogged down in the, well, what if it's bad? What if I make a mistake? What if people don't like it? Just do it, and you can always get better at it later. I'm 6 novels in, and I'm still making refinements to my technical process of how I write and what I write. And if you're a reader, just read everything. Read all kinds of authors. Like, there's a lot of really talented, unknown, independent authors out there.
Yeah, it's a great time to be a reader. It's fantastic. Well, Jen, we've done it again.
Another week is gone. October soon.
I know, but maybe next week it'll be cooler for me. And maybe you won't have any rain.
Let's hope so. Yeah. I'd like to use a nice weekend without rain.
Thank you, everybody, for being on today. And we will talk again soon.
Bye.
Bye.